Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, Spartan Nation. 2 days, no, 3 days after we froze or took us off at Ryan Field, Capital One Field, whatever they call that silly little stadium in Maryland. It feels like a bandbox there. It doesn't feel like a Big Ten stadium. Anyway, whatever they call that field there, it used to be called Ryan Field. 3 days after Michigan State had some fun, gave Spartan fans a little turtle soup to warm up with the night. We are joining you here on Sparty Talk, your podcast for all things Michigan State sports. It's going to be a fun podcast. DB and I are going to be talking about Michigan State's lovely victory. And I have to admit, it was a lot of fun watching Michigan State beat Maryland 37-15. We got to go to the stadium. We tailgated a little bit, ran into some drunk Maryland fans, ran into some obnoxious Maryland fans. We're trying to figure out if there are any other types of Maryland fans. So we'll talk about that. Talk about our experience at the stadium. We'll talk about what we saw on the field, the sort of rebirth of the defense, so to speak. And not just a rebirth, but sort of a revitalization of the defense. We'll talk about an offense that struggled mightily in the cold. We'll talk about a kicking game that seemed to find itself. Geiger back on track. We'll talk about those things. We can talk a little bit about the end of the Big Ten season for football. We got two games left on the schedule, home against Rutgers, and then on the road against Penn State and Happy Valley. And how the Happy Valley game is, the game against Penn State against Happy Valley is going to be a bit of a trap game. Michigan's going to be careful because they can go out there and lose that game. Penn State's defense is quite good. Talk about how the injury bug has once again risen up and bitten the Michigan State Spartans men's basketball team. I'm not sure why it is that Michigan State seems to absorb so many injuries in a basketball season, but they seem to absorb more than their fair share. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk a little Spartan hockey. With the frigid temperatures outside, it is only right that we talk about a game played on ice. Joining me to talk about that and much, much more is the Thin Man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation.
Start off with football, DB. We went to whatever they call that bandbox of a stadium in Maryland for the game.
I thought they were going to change it to Ralph Regan Stadium.
So Michigan State won.
That's where they could call it the fridge. They could call it the fridge.
They could call it the fridge. That's pretty much what the temperatures outside were. All right. So let's start off before we get to the game itself, DB. Let us start off with the tailgate. And the Maryland fans, DB, it struck me that there are two types of Maryland fans, drunk and obnoxious. Those were the only two types we met there. Is that a fair and accurate description of the Maryland fans?
Yeah, they're very obnoxious, and I think for people that live in the Washington, D.C. area that are familiar with not only Maryland fans, but also Baltimore fans, particularly the Orioles. They seem to have Orioles fans and Terps fans that I have the sense that they have this sort of entitlement issue, that they're supposed to be better than they are, that they're supposed to win titles that they haven't won, that they're these legendary teams that show me the championships. They're not there.
And let's just hope they never get good, because as obnoxious as they are right now, could you imagine if they actually had an athletics program worth writing home about?
Yeah, we'd never hear the end of it.
By the way, they're still talking about Corey freaking Lucius in the stands there.
Don't you love it, though? I love every time that drives them crazy.
They're still bitter about it. They will let go of Corey freaking Lucius in the shot to win the game.
They think that, you know, this goes back to the entitlement thing. They should have won the national championship that year, that the Spartans eliminated them in the second round.
Well, you want to know what? I think the Spartans should have won the national championship the year the referees robbed us when Kenny Anderson shot went in at the buzzer when he clearly released it late. But you don't hear me going Kenny freaking Anderson every time Michigan State plays Georgia Tech. In fact, you rarely hear me bring it up except when it comes to clock fiascos and rules changes with the NCAA. Get over it, Terps fans. Holy cow. And then here's the other thing. I think Terps fans actually think they know more about football than the rest of the Big Ten.
Yeah, they do seem to be. Well, it's that ACC arrogance.
Yeah. I mean, they really think they're better. And so it's bad when Terps fans are actually embarrassed by other Terps fans and they walk up to us and apologize for the behavior. Which happened on more than one occasion Saturday night.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I didn't want to engage because some of their fans had more just belligerent, drunk. Really, I wasn't surprised because, you know, you probably weren't either because both lived in this area for a long time, but I think people that weren't familiar with it might have been taken by surprise. You wouldn't have thought that about Maryland fans, but, well, all I know is this. Rutgers is the other new team in the Big Ten, and we're coming to visit you next year, Rutgers, so hopefully you're a little bit less drunk and belligerent.
Yeah, Satchel and DB will be in the house for Rutgers next year. And so we'll see what Rutgers fans are like. But right now, we can tell you what, Maryland fans, you're in the Big Ten. You're right behind Ohio State. I mean, in terms of the conference's worst fans. Really, it's Ohio State won. And it's a runaway. Look, Michigan State fans who have been to Columbus, all right, they know what we're talking about. All right, we've been to Columbus. It's not even close. All right. Just worst fans in the Big Ten, it's a runaway, Ohio State. Now, in terms of arrogance, you know, Michigan fans are the worst. But in terms of drunken, belligerent behavior, it's Ohio State 1, then Maryland 2. But the gap between Ohio State and Maryland is pretty big.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something Maryland aspires to be, right? Their fans want to rival the Buckeyes just in terms of buffoonery. And maybe that's what they're shooting for. And it's important for every fan base to have goals, DB. And perhaps that's what we're looking at.
Well, I believe in karma with these fans, Satchmo. And I have three very quick experiences of situations here where we had arrogant Ohio State fans talk to us in Columbus that time, and we won the game 10-7. And then a long time ago, I was behind a couple of arrogant Notre Dame fans. And Notre Dame fans, Satchmo, you know, they're as arrogant as they get next to the University of Michigan. And so two of their fans, after the Spartans won 23-7, way back in the Nick Saban era, said the following: "This will never happen again," right in front of me. "This will never happen again. For the next 8 straight years, as far as we beat them." And then we had Maryland fans acting like, you know, Michigan State was just chopped liver Saturday night. Well, look at the scoreboard. So you and I got to stretch out our legs as we hoped by the end of the game. And that's all that mattered.
Yeah, that was the funny thing. DB, you and I were hoping when we went to this game that Michigan State would blow the game out early just to give us a little more leg room. They didn't blow the game out early, but they did blow it open by the end of the third quarter. And by the end of the third quarter, the Maryland fans just scattered. I was like watching roaches exit a condemned building.
Roaches.
I mean,
like we sprayed a big can of Raid in the Ralph Regan Stadium.
Yeah, exactly. The Raid came out, and they just took off. They were gone. And the weird thing, DB, is it was only a 2-score game when they left. But once Michigan State pulled ahead by that second touchdown, they were gone. they did not want to see the end of that game. And what do you think crowd size, Stevie? You think figure about a third Michigan State fans, 30%, 25%?
Yeah, I'd go along the line of about 30-ish percent, 35. There was a lot of them over on the Spartan sideline, tucked into that corner. There was a bunch of them in the upper level on that same side that I noticed. And there were pockets of a lot of green and white fans like us sort of scattered around the lower sections that must have got their seats like we did on a SeatGeek or StubHub type thing. So I'd say 35% might be a fair number, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the whole blackout Sparty theme didn't work for Maryland. It just did not work. All right, so now to the game itself. Maryland, DB, as much trash as we're talking about them, really shot themselves in the foot on offense. Look, the Michigan State defense played well, but Maryland had several terrible drops. Just inexplicable drops that really cost that team a chance to score when the game was still in doubt, DB.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really felt in the game like Maryland did shoot itself in the foot. The Spartans were committing a lot of penalties, sort of careless penalties on defense. And really, their quarterback, I don't think he's a bad quarterback. He can certainly move. I think he's got a decent arm. I think there was just, he doesn't have the receiving core. And plus the loss of that Biggs, I believe his name is, Stephon Biggs.
Yeah, Diggs.
That hurt them. Yeah, that hurt them.
Yeah, I think if Diggs plays, this is a different game, DB. The absolutely terrible, and I mean terrible, special teams plays for Michigan State continued in this game. The number of long returns the Spartans gave up, DB, was just ridiculous. I mean, every time they kicked the ball off to them, they just gave them field position.
Yeah, our special teams play is hideous.
Yeah, it's just awful. We can't cover kicks. Our best punt coverage comes when the other team muffs the ball. Because Sadler kicked it short for some inexplicable reason. Although Sadler did get a 66-yard kick in there. But part of the reason was a
66-yarder and a 36-yard roll.
Yeah, exactly. It was a 30-yard roll.
That was because a Maryland player didn't call a fair catch on that one.
And then never mind call a fair catch. He didn't even try to catch it.
Yeah, he didn't even try to catch it. At least he even does that. You know, just gets in front of the ball. He gets about 5 yards. They have the ball midfield. That I think that might have been one of the turning points of the game right there at that point.
Yeah, I think it was, DB. I agree. Because, I mean, how many times is Michigan State team going to be asked to defend a short field, DB, because the special teams didn't get the job done? Whether it's a short kick, short punt, poor kick coverage, whatever it is. I mean, when you give our defense a chance, they come up and shine. But if your special teams can't flip field position, you're asking an awful lot out of the defense.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a problem, DB, when they play Penn State, because that Penn State defense is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michigan State's going to be punting a lot more than they normally do, because it's a really good defense. And if they can't flip field position, if they can't get the ball down the field, if they can't kick off, they can't do the basics on special teams. Look, Penn State isn't going to drive the ball 80 yards down the field in the Michigan State offense, on the Michigan State defense. But if they don't have to, they only have to go 50 yards. They only have to go 60 yards. Well, then, yeah, Penn State can score some points. It's just remarkable how bad our special teams have been this year. It's really problematic. DBR offense wasn't very good against Maryland on Saturday night either.
They
struggled in the passing game.
Yeah, I really feel like Satchmo, the offense, had a hangover from the Ohio State game. I really do. I think they put so much into it, and they actually didn't play that badly against Ohio State. And I felt like they just weren't in sync. Everything from the play calling to Cook's play to the receivers to everything was just sort of seemed a little bit discombobulated. They got it together by the end, and they simplified things by just, okay, we're going to hand the ball off to Nick Hill and Jeremy Langford now.
Yes, and the offensive line did wear Maryland's defensive front down. But what we saw is the continuing of a disturbing trend with Michigan State receivers, which is they struggle to beat press coverage. Ohio State came up and pressed the Michigan State receivers. They struggled to get separation. Maryland came up and pressed the Michigan State receivers. They struggled to get separation. And when they did get separation, Connor Cook just didn't deliver a very good ball. There were at least a half dozen throws that you looked at Connor Cook's like, if you just threw it to him, he would still be running. Instead, you're throwing it in the ground over his head wide. I mean, it just wasn't a good performance.
Yeah, I think overall I would give them probably a C-plus in the game. I think the offensive line deserves the credit for really kind of sort of forcing this through and wearing down the Maryland defensive line, as you say. I think they would get my game ball if I was handing them out because they kind of finished the job.
Yeah, they did. And Langford, as usual, is outstanding. Then Nick Hill had some enormous holes to run through at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Michigan State did struggle in short yardage in the beginning of the game, but old Bugaboo came back to bite them and were unable to pick up some critical third downs early in the game. But they did put it away at the end, just running and running hard and running with some power. You saw a lot more power running formations in the second half than you did in the first half. The other thing that bothered me, DB, it was the play calling. There were just some weird play calls. There is one play call where they're running. Then they go with a play-action pass. Okay, I like the play-action pass. You heard me begging for the play-action pass all game long. But what do they do on the play-action pass? They send two tight ends out into the route. What on earth was that?
Right.
There was nothing. I mean, of course Maryland had it defended because you sent two tight ends out into the route. one deep and one intermediate. It was terrible. And I sat there and I watched that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then all of this running out of a shotgun formation, especially in short yardage situations, line up in a pro sit, get the fullback in there, clear some way, and go, let's make this happen. It was just frustrating. And then, for the love of God, why can't we complete a screen pass? We tried to throw another screen pass in this game. We tried on the Ohio State game. It was wide open, but the throw wasn't there. We tried another one in the Maryland game. The throw wasn't there. I feel like it's been 4 years since we completed. I feel like the last time we completed a screen pass was Le'Veon Bell was in school, DB. I just don't get it.
Yeah, we were talking about Le'Veon Bell. Oh, by the way, congrats to Le'Veon Bell last night. Great game against the Titans, and he became the fourth Steeler in history to have a 200-yard plus game.
Yeah, he rushed for 206 yards.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, nicely done by Le'Veon Bell. And so kudos to him. He is becoming the man in Pittsburgh. And that's good for Michigan State. That's good for Le'Veon Bell. It's good for Pittsburgh. But throw screen. I mean, why? These are the things that just baffle me. Like screen passes are some of the basic stuff. And then, DB, we used to throw wide receiver screens all the time. We don't do that anymore. Everything is down the field. And I'm not a huge fan of the wide receiver screen, but I don't want it completely gone from the offense. I mean, you take a look at what Keyshawn Martin made a living off of wide receiver screens. Blair White, I mean, this used to be a staple of the offense. Where's it gone?
Yeah, I'm sort of missing in action, Satchmo. And at this stage in the season, as we talked about last week, it's very hard to find these things. I mean, this is stuff that develops in spring ball and the offseason and training camp. So if we're noticing this right now, these are things that the coaches will be addressing. I think, on the offensive play calling, you know, we used to really get down on Brad Salem last year, you know, and then Jim Bowman was brought in. And I think for the most, the early part of, since the end of 2012, the early part of last season, they've done a very good job. I attribute just this whole first half or so of the game last week, the Ohio State hangover. I really do. I just think everybody was out of sync. The whole coaching staff. I think people sort of felt like. I'm sure they put their all into the Ohio State. They needed that win, and I can understand the feeling. But you know, you got to strive forward because there's still something to play for.
Yeah. Now the Michigan State defensive line rebounded with a pretty good performance against Maryland, although they displayed what seems to be a continuing trend, DB, which is a frustrating inability to actually take the quarterback down. They do a good job of getting to the quarterback, and then they just don't tackle him.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, that's a great point. That happened numerous times in the Ohio State game with Barrett, and then again with C.J. Brown, and both of those guys can move. In fact, I'd love to see those two guys sprint down the field against each other. I have a feeling C.J. Brown might be even faster than Barrett, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it could be. It entirely could be, but it's a fundamental principle of football. I mean, Davis said it 30 years ago. The quarterback must go down, and the quarterback must go down hard. And it seems like Michigan State's mastered the art of getting to the quarterback and not actually tackling him.
Well, we saw that, too, early in the season against Marietta in Oregon. I mean, it was the same thing. You get a really athletic quarterback, and the Spartans are going to have a little problem with him.
And that really does seem to be the Achilles heel of the Michigan State defenses. Anytime they deal with a mobile quarterback, they seem to be a little bit lost. They get a more stationary quarterback, they're doing all right. But the guys that can elude the rush, they give Michigan State all sorts of problems, all sorts of fits. And Maryland did some of the things, and this is one of the interesting things about the evolution of the Pat Narduzzi defenses. Maryland did some of the things to try and attack Michigan State defense that Ohio State did, that Purdue did, that other teams have tried to do. They just weren't as good at it. They couldn't execute it, but the game plan is there. Man up on the safeties, pick a little bit on Darian Hicks, and try and run the ball. Now, Maryland wasn't able to run the ball. They didn't come close. But they were able to find some openings in the defense against the safeties in man coverage, and they were able to pick on on Hicks a little bit. And at some point, DB, don't you have to worry about Hicks in man-to-man coverage? Because he seems to hold up for a while, and then he gives up a couple of big plays.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of that secondary, and that was the other thing, too. We were talking about C.J. Brown maybe running the ball a little bit, or I was thinking about that, and then you had this other issue where they kept going at Trey Wayne, and it's like their offensive coordinator really must suck because the Maryland fans were saying so. I mean, what were they doing? I mean,
here's the funny thing is Maryland fans who are so obnoxious that they know a lot about football, they didn't realize that Trey Waynes was our best corner. We had to tell them that. And once we told them that, then they got mad at their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Come on, Terps. Do some scouting before you go into the game. If you're going to get mad for a reason. Not because we told you to get mad.
So we have a Twitter feedback here on the air, Statchmo, to our comments about the potentially explosive plays and the drops that Maryland committed on our defense. And the comment was, I didn't watch the game, to which our at Sparty Talk, by the way, is our Twitter handle, to which at Sparty Talk replied, oh, well, sorry, did you not get the Big Ten Network, was the response to the tweet. And to which the person said, your facts don't back up what you're saying. Now, hold the phone here just a minute. I won't call out who it is, but hold the phone just a minute. We were at the game. We saw numerous drops and missed passes by Brown to the Maryland receiver, Satchwell, that could have been just horrible for the Spartan defense to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, there were tons of drops by the Maryland receivers. The facts absolutely back up what we're saying. And there were lots of drops in the games. These were drops that would have extended drives for Maryland, put them into the red zone, put them into scoring position, potentially led to touchdowns. No, this was this isn't a knock on the Michigan State defense. It's a criticism of Maryland's offense. Michigan State's defense played really well, but you want to know what? They were helped by the fact that the Maryland receivers didn't have enough stickum on their gloves. It is. And if you go back just 2 years or 3 years to remember how devastating a drop, case of the drops can be on offense, it really takes your offense out of sync, and it flusters an offense to the point where you wonder whether you can even move the ball when your receivers are dropping the ball all over the field. And so, we're not criticizing Michigan State defense. Michigan State defense played well, but they were aided in a big way by Maryland drops. It was terrible. I felt bad for, the Maryland quarterback's getting hit on every play. And he's watching his receivers drop the ball. And it's just like, yeah. And look, the Maryland quarterback made some terrible throws, just terrible throws. And he didn't play the best of games. But this could have been a ball game. Maryland receivers make a few more catches while the game is close. Because Michigan State didn't pull away until the fourth quarter. If the Maryland receivers make a few, and they went three and out, three straight possessions, I think, in the third quarter. If the Maryland receivers do anything to help their offense, this is a much closer game.
Exactly.
But we got the win. We got it in a route. Michigan State gets it in a route. And so, maybe let's look forward to the next two games, Rutgers and Penn State. Senior night against Rutgers. You're a bit worried about, it's not senior night, it's senior day, but you're a bit worried about senior day and about the Spartans coming out a little bit flat, aren't you?
Yeah, I feel like the Spartans need a lot of, they're going to need some extra motivation this week. I just, it's hard to get excited about Rutgers. The seniors will certainly come out ready to play, but I always worry about these games because strange things happen in senior games sometimes. And the Spartans, for whatever reason, end up tangled in games on senior day that are a little bit closer than they need to be. I mean, even the Minnesota game last year, that would seem by the end that the Spartans kind of took care of business, wasn't a surefire win all the way through the game. I mean, it had you sweating a little bit, at least in the first half. And so, and we've had other ones too, like Indiana before and things where you think, oh yeah, this will be easy. But it isn't. I mean, the only thing I hope for is that they kissed the Sparty on the way off the field.
Yeah, I kind of like that. It's bringing the basketball tradition over to the football field, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
it
really is. And conceptually, I like that. I mean, it's nice if you go to a senior day. If you go to senior day, and you and I have been to our share of senior days, but you go and, they introduce the players and they walk out with their parents. Out into the field and they're dressed up and you get to see the proud parents and it's a really nice way of honoring them, but it would be really cool for Michigan State to just blow Rutgers out early, get a nice 42-0, 49-0 lead, and then be able to bring some of these seniors off one at a time, so they get the sort of ovation the basketball players usually get. I think that would be really cool. The other thing I think would be nice, and it's hard because there are so many, just in terms of numbers, you always have way more football players graduating than you do basketball players. But one of the things I've always liked about the way the basketball team does senior day is Izzo talks about his seniors and introduces them, and the crowd gets to go nuts. And it's turned into such a tradition that the fans actually stay for it. They're there for that end game. I mean, they're there for the post-game ceremony as much as they're there to watch the game itself. It's really hard to do in football, but I'd like to see Michigan State try it. I don't know whether our fans would stick around, DB. That's one of the questions, because it's cold out, and I get that. In a basketball game, you're nice and warm and toasty inside.
Yeah.
You don't really feel like leaving to begin with. But I would like to see something other than, them walking out in the field to be acknowledged by the fans. I would like to see a D'Antonio speech. I would like to see something more special than they do right now.
Well, you know, and Saturday is not going to be, I mean, there's already been some snow there in East Lansing and all over the state of Michigan, and then Saturday is going to be rainy and 40 degrees, so the running game may be, the offensive line and the running game may be the key on Saturday. And Rutgers' defense is not terrible.
No, Rutgers' defense is not terrible. Rutgers' offense Rutgers actually has a good quarterback. Well, good is relative. They have a decent quarterback. But they have a quarterback that's capable of making some really good throws. The question is whether they can get their running game going. I have a hard time believing that Rutgers is going to be able to run the ball on Michigan State. So then it becomes a question of whether Michigan State's offense can put some points on the board and just demoralize Rutgers early. Because the one thing you don't want to do is give a team like Rutgers hope. The longer they stay in the game, the more hope they have. And it's you just want to take it away from them early. Just step on their throat, crush them early, take care of business, and then move on. And that's what you have to do against Rutgers. And hopefully that's what we're going to see. I will be watching it on the Big Ten Network. It's a noon start. So the Big Ten Network bothers me a little bit, DB. And let's just get this out there, is that they should, on senior days, they should be going to the games early, right? They don't got anything better to do.
Yeah.
They should be going to the games early to cover some of the senior day celebrations.
Exactly.
I mean, well, what's the point of the Big Ten Network if they're not going to do stuff like that? I mean, come on, Big Ten Network, get with it. I mean, it really is terrible.
We've got
the Rutgers, DB. I mean, all things considered, I understand worrying about it. I'm more worried about the Penn State game than the Rutgers game.
Yeah.
Because Penn State might have one of the two best defenses or three best defenses in the conference. That's an outstanding defense. No one's really scored on them, DB, all year long. Every team that's played Penn State has struggled. It's going to be on the road. And this reminds me of games where Michigan State was playing the spoil Penn State season and came out with their best effort of the year, trying to get into a bowl game, doing whatever it is. Penn State's already bowl eligible. They're trying for a better bowl game. They're playing a top 20 team in their house, in their arena, and maybe a top 10 team in their arena, depending on whose poll you use. This is a big deal for the Nittany Lions. Beating Michigan State would be a massive achievement for them. So they're going to come out with their absolute best shot, and Michigan State's got to be ready for it.
Right, and Penn State's dangerous. They have nothing to lose. They're bowl eligible again. They're going to a bowl game, and you're exactly right. And so, I mean, the key in that game, again, is the offensive line is going to be – you know, ginormous in that game to contain that Penn State defensive front. And Cook is going to have to play one of the best games he's ever played. I mean, you know, the Penn State defense is solid front to back.
Yeah. And Penn State's got an NFL-caliber quarterback in Hackenberg.
They do. I mean, Bill O'Brien left, and he left it to a very good coach in James Franklin, and he's building it again. I think Hackenberg just doesn't have the – he doesn't have the weapons yet, but I think, you know, they're still dangerous, though. The Spartans have to be careful. And look, you know, the reality of the situation is this now. Ohio State needs to lose two games. Are they going to lose to Indiana and Michigan? No, probably not. But, you know, the fact is that the Spartans can play for a really good bowl game. And I have some of the bowl projections that I was looking at this evening, Satchmo, the tweet to that point that I could share where the Spartans could possibly go.
Yeah.
Well, so if the Spartans were to win these last two games, we're assuming the Big Ten championship is off the table because Ohio State losing two games in a row now. The game in Minnesota last week for Ohio State was the one that we were hoping they would lose, and then you had the possibility of, you know, an Indiana upset or a Michigan upset, still, you know, very small, but possible. But that didn't happen. So the Spartans are looking at still a very good bowl game, and the projections right now are that they would meet potentially Mississippi State, the other MSU, in the Fiesta Bowl in Tempe, Arizona.
Oh, that would be a fun game, DB.
It sure would, yeah.
That would be a fun game. Wow.
Mm-hmm. That would be a Mississippi State team there.
It is, and that would be an opportunity for this Michigan State football team to come out and say, yeah, we're a top 10 team. We're worthy of the college football playoffs. Never mind the fact that we lost Ohio State. Never mind the fact that we lost to Oregon early in the season. Watch us now.
Oh, yeah. It'd be two teams. One in Mississippi State, so the Spartans are going up against a team that was number one for a good stretch of time, and two teams that would really be licking their wounds from late season losses.
And plus, I just like Tostitos. What are the other bowl projections have us in?
Well, there was another one that said we could possibly go to the Cotton Bowl. The opponent for that one was unclear. The other projections have Ohio State going to that game because people are saying, these projection people like Jerry Palm and some of these guys, saying that Ohio State, even if they won the Big Ten championship, may not necessarily qualify in that four-team playoff. That a lot of people think Florida State and Oregon and Alabama are going to lock up spots. And then it's just that fourth one, which may go to a Big 12 team like Baylor or TCU, which are sort of hanging around the 4 or 5 slots right now. So Ohio State just might be shut out of the door, basically.
Hmm. Well, yeah. I would love to play Mississippi State out in the desert. I think that would be fantastic. You know, the Cotton Bowl sort of lost its luster, D.B. It used to be a big-time bowl game.
Yeah.
And now it doesn't feel like that anymore, although it is played in Jerry World now. It's no longer played in the original Cotton Bowl stadium.
And with the advent of these college playoffs and moving the Fiesta Bowl or two of these former BCS bowls to New Year's Eve, like this year the Fiesta Bowl and the Orange Bowl are moved to New Year's Eve, what's interesting now is the Cotton Bowl finds itself back on New Year's Day, which is great. That's where it really should be, because for a while it drifted off the schedule onto the second or third, and people lost track of it.
Yeah, and it could be that the Cotton Bowl sort of finds a rebirth on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
It used to be an important bowl game. It used to be a game that everyone paid attention to and people stopped, and now people might pay attention to it again. And it could be fun to go check out Jerry World.
Yes, I agree. Now, here's something for you, Satchmo. I'm just throwing this out there. How bad do you think, because right now, the projection for the University of Michigan, Satchmo, is that they get their sixth win this Saturday when they play the Maryland Terrapins in the Big House and then lose, of course, to Ohio State in Columbus the following week, putting them at 6 wins, therefore putting them into the inaugural Detroit Lions Quick Lane Lube bowl game at Ford Field.
Wow.
Yeah, wow is right. How bad, though, do you think Michigan fans just simply want them to tank and come up one short rather than go through the agony of that bowl game?
Well, so, all right, so it depends on how intelligent your Michigan fan is, right, which is always an open question. And so the truly intelligent among them will want them to go to a bowl game, any bowl game. And the reason they'll want them to go to a bowl game, any bowl game, is because it does two things. The first is it gives the players that are currently on the team more practice time. That's the whole point of going to bowl games. You need the practice time. The more practice time you get, the better. And bowl games provide practice time. So that's the first reason, and that's the most important reason why any U of M fan with a semblance of intelligence would want Michigan to go. The second reason is that it extends the clock on the hiring. It extends the clock on the hiring of the AD, and it extends the clock on the hiring of a new head coach, because we're assuming that Brady Hoke is gone. And so it gives the University of Michigan more time to do that, because it allows It allows Hulk to coach out the season. They can take a little more time to figure out what they do with the AD situation. They can take a little more time to figure out what they do with the coaching situation, especially if they're considering NFL coaches, DB. Because those coaches don't come available till January.
Right.
And so for a variety of reasons, it would behoove the University of Michigan to play in a bowl game, and play in any bowl game. Any bowl game that extends the clock is good for them.
Yeah, I mean, you do want that practice time. You do want to play. And how much do you want to bet? I mean, I think Brady Hoke is a buyout. It's going to be in the couple million dollar range, but I think it's $1 million less if they fire him after January 1. So it wouldn't surprise me for fiscal reasons if they just sort of let him, you know, you could let him linger through the bowl game. And
yeah.
Then a few days after, call him in the office when it's January 2nd and then safely can him. And then that bonus went down by $1 million.
And then you do have to be financially responsible. You have to be fiscally prudent. So all of those things make sense. And so, yes, I'm sure that Michigan fans aren't thrilled about the concept of them playing in the inaugural Detroit Lions Bowl. I have a feeling that Michigan fans aren't exactly going to turn out in huge numbers to watch the University of Michigan play in the inaugural bowl, if
no.
That's indeed what happens. But they should accept it. If they turn it down, this is another example of what was the Mark D'Antonio thing? Pride comes before the fall. It would be an example of that.
Right.
And so they should have let pride get in the way of that.
Yeah. Also, another just quick thing. We'll transition over to basketball real quick, Satchem, after this. But how much would you – I mean, let's just face it. Most Big Ten fans, Satchem, don't like Urban Meyer and therefore don't care for Ohio State. But how much would you love it, Satchem? Looking at the standings right now, obviously it's clear, barring the unexpected, that it's the Buckeyes versus the Badgers in the Big Ten Championship game, which would be a pretty good matchup. Wouldn't you just love to see Melvin Gordon go off on the Buckeyes and up?
I would love to see Melvin Gordon run for 408 yards against Ohio State. That would be fantastic.
He may not run for 400, but he's going to run for a lot, because that is one area that I find that Ohio State's a little weak. The Spartans were able to run the ball very well against Ohio State. The game film is open on that one.
I think Wisconsin can run the ball in Ohio State. And I think if Melvin Gordon goes off for 408 yards, they're going to win the game. If he runs for 300 yards, they're going to win the game. I think realistically he's going to run for 150-ish yards against the Buckeyes. And then the Wisconsin quarterback, he's going to need to make one or two plays down the field. Just enough to keep them honest. It's sort of like when the Ravens won the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer wasn't any good, but he made just enough plays to help the Ravens win. Just enough. And that's all Wisconsin's asking for their quarterback. They're not asking him for him to be good. Just on the occasional 3rd and 5, complete a pass that's 7 yards down the field. Just occasionally. Keep the chains moving so you can hand it back off to Gordon. But Gordon's a beast.
Oh, he sure is. I'm kind of glad the Spartans, don't have to face Gordon this year, because that would be a handful to deal with. It's a handful for anybody to deal with. And that Wisconsin defense isn't bad.
No. And they'll come up with a game plan for Ohio State, and they'll be right. I think that'll be fun. And I really don't care about the reputation of the Big Ten. You just beat Ohio State. Take them down.
Yeah, I think exactly. That's where I'm at. I think it would just be fun to watch Urban Meyer cry in a slice of pizza again this year.
Oh, how great would that be? More
that would
cold
be fantastic.
Pizza for Urban Meyer. maybe he was a fan of the old ESPN2 show, Cold Pizza. And it just all stems from that.
One more really fast question, because it's on my mind real quick. That's more, the Nebraska, could they fire Bo Pelini now all of a sudden, even though the record is pretty good, too, even after that shellacking?
He's going to go 9-4 again, right?
I think he's sitting at 9-1 right now, or 9-2 right now. I think they've got two. Yeah, they've got two losses to Michigan State and Wisconsin.
Oh well, yeah. Well, look, he's going to do better than 9-4, right? So that's an improvement.
Yes, that means they can't get rid of him.
Yeah, they can't get rid of him. The funny thing is, you have to believe that everyone in Nebraska wants to get rid of him.
Yeah. Yes.
Hold on a second. You've inspired me to go look for the Nebraska record here.
Okay.
So Nebraska's 8-2.
Oh, 8-2. Okay. And do you see their schedule there? Who their last two games are against?
Okay. So they've got Minnesota. They've got Minnesota and Iowa left.
Oh, those are actually not automatic wins for them.
No, they're not automatic wins. You have to like their chances. They're at Iowa, so that's a road game. And they're home against Minnesota. Now, Minnesota's a pretty good football team. This is going to be interesting because they could end up at 9-3 and lose in a bowl game and end up at 9-4. So they could be on track. But you got to like their chances to finish with at least 9 wins and probably 10 or 11. But how do you if they beat Minnesota and they beat Iowa, how do you fire Bo Pelini?
Well, you can't do that. I mean, it just makes you look terrible if you fire a guy with a, you know what? No, they could end up 10-2.
But you know they want to.
Yeah, you know they want to. But the fact is that that's a situation where the Nebraska administration has to be very, very stern that. You know, you don't want your job to turn into a joke, and coaches not want to come there because 10-2 is unacceptable. I mean, that's a good season. A lot of programs will give their left arm to be 10-2 all the time. Just like Spartan Nation, Spartans end up with that same record. You know, that's where we want to be every year.
Yeah, but it's a weird spot, DB, because Nebraska hasn't won a Big Ten title yet.
Nope.
How long have they been in the conference?
Since 2011, I believe.
Yeah, that's not what Nebraska fans were expecting when they joined the Big Ten.
No, they expected to be dominating every year.
And they reached the Big Ten championship game just once, and they got spanked that year.
They got spanked by Wisconsin, I believe.
Yeah.
Here comes an
interesting question. Would the Wisconsin-Nebraska games become a rivalry game, DD?
Yeah.
If you keep losing to your rival, how long do you stick around?
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, it's no different than, you know, Michigan constantly losing to Ohio State or Michigan State or vice versa or whatever. That's exactly right. Yep. I mean, those are, on paper, the best two teams in that division, for all intents and purposes. They're the two most solid programs in that division. And so, therefore, that is going to be the rivalry, and they're going to be playing every year for that division, at least for the foreseeable future. And so, yeah, if you're not winning that, after a while, you know, I mean – yeah, it's like a John Cooper thing. He's going 10-2 every year, but not winning the big game. Well, after a while, you do have to evaluate. But I think firing him this year would be a mistake.
Well, I'm rooting for them to go 9-4 because I like September 4th being the official Bo Pelini holiday.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, here's the thing. I like Nebraska. I like Nebraska fans. Nebraska fans are so nice and so polite, and they're genuine too. That you really want Nebraska to do well because they're really good people.
Yeah,
it's so Nebraska. We really do like you. It's just the whole 9-4 thing. It's just funny. But all right. I think that's a good place to leave the football off. Let's really quickly, basketball, DB. what's going on with our basketball team? Why can't they stay healthy? Alvin Ellis III goes down with an injury against Navy.
Man.
Really? Bryn Forbes dealing with broken bone in his hand, now being pressed into duty. He's playing like Mo Pete-type stuff. This is ridiculous. Why can't our basketball team stay healthy?
Yeah, we seem to be bit by the injury bug every year. And the only thing I can attribute it to, Satchmo, is that I just think that when you're on one of Tom Izzo's teams, you're going 90 miles an hour every single day in practice and then in the game. And also, some of that is just bad luck. I mean, you know, you don't go out there and get injured. I mean, you know, you don't go out looking to be hurt. I mean, you know, you can try to psychoanalyze every player. Did he think about something too much, whatever it is. But the fact is, it seems to happen every season to the Spartan basketball team. And it hurts because, you know, they're trying to grow this team here, and they're going to take some lumps in some of these games early on against bigger opponents.
Well, yeah, and you got Bess, who's got like an injured foot. We have tons of injured foots on our team. That's we seem to specialize in it. I mean, we could probably build. We could probably build our own orthopedic wing on the Breslin Center just to handle all of these guys. It's just ridiculous, and it's absolutely frustrating because you look at other teams, DB, and they don't go through nearly the physical. Look, every team gets injuries, right? And every team has catastrophic and season-ending injuries and things like that. So it's not that other teams don't deal with injuries. I just feel like other teams don't deal with injuries on the same level that Michigan State does, and I would like to know why.
Right.
And then there has to be an explanation. That said, just quickly looking at basketball team, if our big men can stay out of foul trouble, DB, we've got a shot. We are really short at the shooting guard position right now with Alvin Ellis hurt. You got Bryn Forbes, and that's about it. Because you got no Bess. Travis Trice played a heck of a game against Navy. That's why Michigan State won. But, I mean, realistically speaking, our two biggest weaknesses is one shooting guard. We just don't have depth at that position. And the others can, Costello and Schilling, stay out of foul trouble. Because if they stay out of foul trouble, they can be effective. But if they're both in foul trouble, then we have no size. And then, you got no size and you got no shooting guard? I mean, we do in Forbes, but he's injured. But he's going to be playing massive minutes, and we have no depth in that position. Michigan State's really shorthanded right now. They need to get healthy because you can't go through the season playing with a rotation like this.
Yeah, well, you know, and this is a depth issue, and you knew this could happen if people get hurt, and it's the kind of thing that could derail the season. Let's give a little bit of credit here to Navy, though. Navy's not Duke or they're not Kansas or anything, but they're a scrappy basketball team that I kind of had a feeling they'd be in the game. I mean, you know, no matter who, you know, you could have put the best Spartan team of all time out there, and I think Navy would have maybe not as close, but Navy would have played a heck of a game.
Well, this is Navy's Super Bowl, right? They've got Michigan State on their own floor.
This is the biggest game of the season for them.
Yeah, and Michigan State on their own floor, national TV, the whole thing. Well, CBS Sports Network really isn't national TV. But it's as close as Navy gets. This was a big deal for them. So you do have to credit Navy. You do have to worry about the Michigan State depth issues and injury issues. And it's a sense, DB, that right now you can't evaluate this Michigan State team. You can't evaluate them until they start getting players back and until they start getting players healthy. So until Forbes gets healthy, until Ellis gets healthy, until Bess comes back, all of this stuff is just they're playing for survival right now. They'll get valuable experience, but we're really not going to understand what this basketball team has until we get into conference play.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's when you want to know before that. The good news is that they have a lot of opponents in the non-conference season that even sort of a portion of their team should be able to go on the floor, and I don't want to say handle with ease, but they should be able to go on the floor and hold their own. some of these games. I mean, their toughest competition, looking at some of these, obviously Duke, and then they could play Kansas in that Orlando Classic on Thanksgiving weekend if things worked out the right way. And then they have an interesting game at Notre Dame in the ACC Big Ten Challenge this year. That's who the Spartans draw, is a road game at Notre Dame, who they haven't played in a very long time.
Why does Michigan State always seem like they're on the road for the ACC Big Ten Challenge?
Not really sure.
It always feels like they're on the road. When do the good teams come to the Breslin Center?
Yeah, I mean, I know North Carolina has. And, well, the one thing that's good is this. Those games definitely should be on campus. I mean, I don't like to see those games played in neutral places. You know, the Spartans in Carolina tried that before in the Ford Field, and it was, I thought it was a disaster. You know, I just think, you know, you want to have those games in on the campuses, you know, and so, yeah, well, let's do that there.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm glad we're going to play Notre Dame. It'll be fun. It'll be good. It'll be at Notre Dame. But it's about time we start getting these Big Ten AC. It seems like every game's on the road, and even the home games we're playing at Ford Field. Let's play them at the Breslin Center. Let's get them on campus. Let's get some excitement for these games. Really quickly, DB, Spartan hockey.
Yeah.
Hildebrand.
Hockey teams that, well, yes. Well, Jake Hildebrand is the only reason the Spartans have a pulse. I mean, he is holding them up in these games single-handedly. In some of the games we watched, last weekend they played at New, or I'm sorry, a couple weekends ago, they played at New Hampshire and split. That's a very tough team to play. And the Spartans eked one out 4-3. Primarily, I mean, their offense did well, but their defense was terrible, and Hildebrand must have made 45 or saves in that game. It was time after time that he was stopping shots from going in the net. He was all over the place. And he really made Boston College, you know, sweat out a 3-2 win in Mon Arena last weekend. I mean, that's almost a victory in itself for the Spartans to play a team like Boston College even at home and only lose 3-2. But, yeah, the goalie is the goalie is the reason the Spartans are standing at the moment, and I believe there are 3 wins and 6 losses.
Is Hildebrand good enough to steal a Big Ten title?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they could do that for a whole season, Satchmo. I mean, you're talking about Minnesota having to play them 4 times, Wisconsin, Michigan is a very good offense. No, I just don't think so. And the Spartans' offense is so streaky. The Spartans are funny. They can't play the game two ways. They're either too defensive or they're too offensive. When they open it up too much, their defense flips. It's very strange to me, and we've been seeing it for the last couple of years. And I can't put my finger on it, but something has to be done about it. And I don't know if it's the personnel or the system or a combination of the two things, but it's weird because a lot of times you see teams be able to play that way and, you know, they get back on defense. And the Spartans' defense, I don't know, sometimes they're kind of flat-footed out there. It's an interesting problem.
But to me, it's a team speed thing, right? If they open it up, they start taking chances, but they don't have the speed to get back.
No, I mean, that's a problem. And that's a talent issue, and maybe that will come. That's also a physical, you know, issue too, Satchmo. And certainly they're not as slow as they were last year, but they're still not lightning fast. I mean, look, they're staying in these games with New Hampshire and Boston College, and yeah, they pulled off a split with Ferris, which is a very good team. I think they came in ranked in the top 5 at the beginning of the year, but this non-conference schedule for Michigan State is brutal. They start Big Ten play soon. They have 2 games in Columbus coming up. They have Minnesota at home in early December. Throw in a road trip with Princeton, you have the GLI, and then you're starting conference play in earnest again in January, and it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy at all.
Well, at the very least, conference play isn't going to be a step up in competition. They've been playing at this game speed all season long. And that, I think, is actually going to help them going into conference play. So whereas other teams are, I mean, look, the Big Ten is really good. It's a really good conference. And so, but for a lot of those teams, they're going to have to step up in terms of game speed, whereas Michigan State's been playing that speed all season long. I think that's going to help them.
Well, yeah, and real quick, the one thing that I said this early in the year, the Spartans can keep themselves afloat in this non-conference part and then do well in the conference part. Their RPI is going to be very strong because of all these games that Tom and Asta scheduled early in the season. So if they make the tournament, you know, they can thank that if they somehow survive.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it on a note of optimism, on a hockey note of optimism. I think that's a fantastic way to end the show. Any final thoughts before we say bye-bye, DB?
I'll say real quick, we may in coming weeks have to work in some conversation with the women's basketball team and talk about a recent or upcoming game where they play Notre Dame in the Breslin Center.
Yeah, I got to admit, I do like Susie Merchant's squad this year. I think it has a chance to make some noise, and it has an absolute chance to be something special this year. So definitely looking forward to the women's team and then talking a little women's hoops because they've got a good group of women playing this year, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. All right, I like that. Optimism about Michigan State hockey and a little women's basketball talk coming up. That's a good note. That's a good way to end the show. All right.
That's right.
On that note, it is time for us to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.